For the next couple hours, we're going to talk about you. We're going to talk about how we can help you change things in your life. Spring Washam joining us. Her book is called A Fierce Heart. We'll be back with her in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, meditation teacher Spring Washam with us, leading retreats throughout the world, including deep into the Amazon. She has extensive experience and training in indigenous healing practices using plant medicine, and her work brings mindfulness-based healing practices to inner-city communities as well. She's the founder of the Lotus Vine Journeys. We'll have her talk about that, too. Her book is called A Fierce Heart. Spring, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you.
Looking forward to this. And when we talk about healing, we're not just talking about physical healing, are we?
No. We're talking about mentally, physically, emotionally. Yes.
How'd you get involved in it? How'd this happen for you?
Well, I got involved in studying psychology when I was a teenager, just really interested in understanding my mind and sort of working with a depression, and was really curious about people around me and the suffering around me. So I first got interested in just trying to understand psychology. Like something is going on with my mind. I know it in other people's minds. So, and then that led me in the path of meditation. And then everything kind of opened up from there.
What's it like being at the Amazon? And God, they had those horrible fires there. Are they still going on, do you know?
You know, I hear that it is. It's more on the Brazil side. I'm on the Peruvian side.
Okay.
But it's so hard to know what's accurate with reporting, but there are still some fires going on in that area, yes.
Have you ever been to Nazca in Peru?
Nazca, no.
That is where Eric von Däniken wrote his award-winning book, Chariots of the Gods, where all these structures are etched into the ground that you can only see from above. And his theories about unidentified objects and alien visitations and stuff. But it's an amazing place. If you ever get out there, the next time you're in Peru, if you're close up there, you got to go by there and see these things.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of beautiful places up in the Andes and the Sacred Valley up by Machu Picchu. All kinds of mystical experiences, and people report all kind of things in that area. But it's really beautiful. Proof. Quite magical.
Yeah, I had my guest on before you came on, Christian Wild, who was giving some great advice, Spring. And one of the things we were talking about is how this planet somehow seems to have remedies for maybe just about every ailment or illness that we have. How in the world does that happen?
Compassion. That's my theory, that it's a compassionate universe. And that as things arise, there's these remedies and cures, and they come in the form of plants or information. I think it's something to do with compassion. I mean, that's my theory.
Tell me about the title of your book, A Fierce Heart. What does that mean for us?
Well, A Fierce Heart, the book I write a lot about how difficult moments can be doorways. And when you think of a heart and you think of the word fierce, they don't initially go together. But it's about being strong. You know, the title is Finding Strength, Courage, and Wisdom in Any Moment. And I really do mean any moment. And sometimes, you know, people are going through really difficult periods in their lives right now.
Oh, my God, yeah.
A lot of dark night of the soul and confusion. And how do you work with that skillfully? How do you meet challenges, whether it's a financial challenge or a physical challenge or just when times are hard, how do you use that experience to actually open and grow? So that's sort of the theory of the book, is kind of using our challenges as opportunities, and not in a cliche way, but in a real way. You know, how can this be a lesson? How could this suffering, if I open to it, not shut down, you know, don't let it make me bitter, but allow me to investigate life. You know, sometimes pain can be a huge opener for someone, a doorway, open the heart. It can allow more compassion and understanding to come in. So that's kind of where the title came from, is my own experiences using trauma and suffering and everything that one experiences in a human life to grow, to awaken something.
And are we using the power of our self and our minds to do this, as opposed to taking prescription pills and anti-anxiety drugs and stuff like that?
Yeah, in a way we are. You know, we're learning, you know, when it comes to our emotions, we're learning a new way of being. You know, for most people, the thing that they dread the most are painful emotions, right? I mean, we usually take prescription medication. It's, there's something going on with our emotions. Rather, we feel fear and anxiety, or we feel sadness, or maybe we have too much energy in the body. And so working with, you know, in a meditative way, we're learning how to be with our emotions, not to act them out, not suppress them, not feed them. But there's a new way of learning how to be with the present moment, and that's through becoming mindful, you know, being aware of what's happening and allowing that to unfold in a natural way.
I was going to say, in order to fix something, you have to be cognizant of it, that it's happening to you, don't you?
Yeah, you have to become present with it in order to not only fix, but just to allow it to be okay that it's there.
Spring, what have you found to be some of the most prevalent issues that face people? Is it like a death in a family, losing a relationship, breaking up with somebody you care about? What is it that really drives people to sadness and get them upset?
I think it's all of that. And I think if I went even a little bit deeper, it's kind of what I consider sort of like a soul level sickness. It's the loss of a purpose. Like, I don't know why I'm here. I don't know what this means anymore. What is the point of living this experience? Why am I going through this again? You know, or I don't know how to get out of this. I don't know how to change my life. So in some ways, it's people feeling a kind of lost feeling or a lack of purpose. And I meet people who are experiencing this on all levels of the spectrum. Someone who could be really wealthy and suddenly lose interest in their job or their career or their pursuit. Or it could be someone really young who's inquiring into this, like, what's going on? Why do I suddenly feel so unhappy and things don't feel meaningful anymore?
I bet social network really affects a lot of younger people, worse than we think.
Yeah, I think in some levels, you know, the changes in our society. Yeah, I think when people are looking for connection, I think with the younger generation, I think they're really longing for connection, and they use social media as a way to see what's happening in the world, to see their peers. But that can be a sort of a way that we compare ourselves in an unhealthy way, right? Like, oh, everybody else is having a great time but me. But we don't realize that a lot of people are, you know, we pretend. You know, a picture, you know, can say a lot of things, but also it can be really inaccurate. You know, it can be like, here I am smiling, and then, but things aren't so good. So social media can create a lot of illusion of perfection, illusion that everything is perfect, when in reality, it may not always be the case.
Well, with Spring Washam, her book has a Fierce Heart, Finding Strength, Courage, and Wisdom in Any Moment. Her two websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. What do you think, Spring, goes through somebody's mind the moment they attempt or commit suicide? The horror that they must be going through. And I'm not talking about someone who's so drugged up they don't know what they're doing or drunk, but somebody who, you know, has got their faculties and they just decide, for whatever reason, life is so bad for them, they want to get out of it and they want to kill themselves. But right before they do it, what do you think they're thinking about?
I think they really think that going through with killing the physical body will end their pain. I think they really think this is an exit. This is a doorway to freedom. Otherwise,
yeah.
I don't think that they would do it. I think that they think that that's the end. I won't have to feel these feelings anymore. I won't have to be in this situation that's so painful. I won't have to deal with this confusion. And who knows what really happens, you know, the next moment. We know death occurs, but, you know, as far as a spiritual, you know, belief system, we go on, you know.
Well, why can't they say to themselves, this very moment maybe the darkest moment of my life, but you know what? It's not going to be this way forever, and it's going to get better, and I'll look back at this day, and I'll say, huh, why did I go through that? Why can't they do that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I know a lot of people have had suicidal ideation, or even maybe an attempt, or maybe they stopped themselves many times, or and then they did pull themselves out of it. I know, and I think that that's sort of the reason that, you know, as a healer and a teacher, I'm so interested in helping people work with their emotion. I mean, you know, that's sort of it's reached a, you know, a 911 moment when someone is very close to suicide. And there are a lot of people who get talked down off the ledge. But obviously, as we know, there are people who go through with it. And I think in those moments, they just don't believe that there's an ending to that painful experience.
It must be painful, though. Very, very painful for them.
Oh, yeah.
To
I mean, you feel like you can't be there anymore. You don't want to be present with it anymore. And people don't always remember impermanence in those moments. It feels like this is how it's going to be forever.
That's got to be a sad moment, too.
I know. It evokes compassion. Depression is hell.
We have had people, Spring, call this program, and we may do it when we take calls with you next hour, but we've had people call this program in the midst of wanting to kill themselves. And fortunately, we have been able to talk them through this. I'm not going to hang up on somebody like that.
Right.
But we've been able to talk them through this to the point where we say, all right, you call us next week, and you tell us how you're doing. So they talk to producer Tom, who got you on the line here, and stuff like that. But
it's just great. That's really beautiful. I mean, it's a lifeline to someone. And, you know, when they do get through that moment, you know, there's a new life waiting on the other side of that. Sometimes we, you know, it's like, you know, the dark night, it seems like it's permanent, but it is a cycle. It is a stage. And so I talk a lot about those kind of moments in my book and how to be in those difficult moments and how to survive those moments. That's what A Fierce Heart is all about. Can I be in this hell realm experience, get through it, and even then on the other side, grow from it, let that be my testimony, or, you know, what I can share with others. Isn't that what we love about the underdog hero stories, people who have endured everything,
yep.
You know,
pulled themselves up.
Yes. And we love that. We love to hear stories like that. I love reading biographies like that. Someone who has, you know, been through every trauma, every humiliation, every injustice, and then they're able to somehow come out of it, not only thriving, but with a compassionate heart, and then lean down to help someone else.
Where does the plant medicine come into what you do?
So the plant medicine came into my life because if you read through some of my book, I had a lot of early traumatic experiences, and I was looking for a way to understand and heal from trauma. And I learned about, you know, as we know now, people are using this word a lot more and being diagnosed with, you know, aspects of PTSD or early childhood trauma. And so as a culture and a society, we are learning more about what it means to have experienced trauma and how it's held in the body and how it's held in our psyche, right? We know that it has impact. You know, if you take someone who has suffered extreme child abuse and then you take them, you know, as an adult later, that will play itself out in some way if it's not addressed, right? It's like alive in the system. And so I was not subject to extreme child abuse, but just more neglect and some traumatic things that happened and just growing up in sort of poverty and all kinds of other things. But at one stage in my life, I thought I had overcame all that. I'd been years on the meditation path and had traveled the world and had swam with dolphins and been blessed by gurus.
You've done it all.
I thought I was done, right? I'd done therapy. I'd done, you know, yoga. I was, you know, had a great diet. I thought, okay, I'm good. And then at one point, I went through that dark night of the soul. I fell apart on a long retreat And I realized it was all this unresolved trauma. And so I got really interested in it because many people in my community, when I was working in downtown Oakland, I saw what was happening to people around me and the impact of experiences that were not resolved. So a friend of mine said to me, well, there's this plant. And she said, she was a psychologist, and I had met with her when I was having my dark night of the soul experience, one of them. I've had many and overcome them all. But I was meeting with a friend who was a clinical psychologist, and I was saying, oh, my gosh, I'm so destabilized, and I couldn't eat, and I had the ringing in my ears, and I felt this terrible fear and nausea. And, I mean, it was just all these symptoms that I was really confused about. And I couldn't be with it. It was the first time that I couldn't seem to just be present. I couldn't rely on my spiritual practices, right? I was too basically disassociated, out of my body, not connected to my body, which leads to more panic, more fear, and more terror when that happens to you. And so she told me, she said, you know, this was maybe 12 years ago, she said, I know this is going to sound so crazy, but there is this plant that grows in the Amazon forest, right in the jungle, and I've been working with it, that's what she told me, for mm-hmm. the last couple years, and it's been amazing and to heal her own childhood things that happened to her. And she said, I want you to come. There's a beautiful shaman who happens to be in town, and a couple of nights, a small group, just psychologists are going to be gathering. Come and just try it. And I was like, what? Drink this plant from the Amazon?
Was it ayahuasca? I got to guess.
It was ayahuasca. And I was so down and out that I was open. You know, when you're at rock bottom, you'll try anything. You know, you're like, this can make me feel better.
I've never tried it. What does it do for you?
Okay, so basically, you know, it is a vine. It's a vine and another plant mixed together, and it's cooked down. And they've been using it for thousands of years, I think in Peru.
Is it like a tea, or is it thick and gooey? What's it like?
It's like consistency between tea and a little bit thick and gooey. So it's a little bit thicker than milk, maybe like more like cream, but maybe a little.
Maybe like yogurt?
Not that thick. It's definitely drinkable. It's something you can just kind of.
Yogurt and water.
like a
watered down
milk.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe like a full fat milk or something like that.
It doesn't nauseate you or anything like that?
It does nauseate you at times.
It does?
What it is it's, I try to explain this, and I'm writing a second book about all of this, healing and working with plants.
Do you know David Hatzor Childress? Any chance?
No.
David is a ayahuasca booster.
Okay.
He must have it tattooed on his arm or something.
Okay, well, all I can do is tell you what happened to me that first night and then what has happened to me. But I did. I went and I took it, and you only need maybe a tablespoon. It's not like you're taking a huge amount. And when you take the medicine, it takes you on a journey. And it what it has is that one of the active ingredients is DMT.
Does it knock you out?
No, you're very present. It's a medicine, and it's all I can say is it's a doctor. It's an incredibly, and this is what sounds
can
so
you
weird.
Talk and function?
At times you can talk and function, but you're not going to feel like talking and functioning really. You basically do it in the dark. Usually if you're in the jungle, all the ceremonies are at night. There's usually two or three people leading the ceremony.
All right, we're going to take a break, Spring, but let's talk more about this because I want to see what the effect is on that. Kids, don't try that at home. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take your calls next hour with Spring Washam as we talk about a work of fierce heart. Maybe some of you have gone through some of these. If you've contemplated the suicide, check in with us too. I'd like to hear your story. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with Spring Washam. Spring, we're talking about your ayahuasca experience, and you said that, you really don't want to talk a lot when you're doing it. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, it's not really that kind of experience. It's very internal. Most people are sitting very still, their eyes closed, they're lying down, and they're sort of going on a journey, you know, and then it's a journey into their own heart and mind, and Ayahuasca, you know, one of the ways that it's described by the indigenous people is vine of the soul or a sacred vine. So ayahuasca is considered a plant spirit. Like it's alive. It has spirit. It's a doctor. And so we don't ever refer to it as a drug. If you've worked with it, you know that it's not like that. It doesn't work at all in the same form of like a drug would work or something like that, because this is something that's taking you into yourself, and it's really powerful. It really heals you. If you want to understand a little bit more about how it works on all four levels of our human system. So on the physical level, yes, it can create what we call purging, which is how we remove toxins from the body or energies in the body that are harmful. So most people are consume a lot of chemicals and alcohol and GMO foods, and you know, our lives are kind of filled with chemicals and products that have a lot of toxicity. And so that, as we know, that creates a buildup in the body. And so sometimes you might purge because of that.
How long does it stay in your system?
So a journey with the medicine can last anywhere between maybe 5 to 6 hours, depending. Sometimes a little.
It's a long time.
Sometimes a little more. Yeah.
When it's done, when this journey, as you call it, is over, you feel good?
Yeah, you oftentimes you feel a lot better, or you have some kind of clarity about yourself that you didn't understand before. Most people take it because they have questions and they want to.
So you remember things.
Oh yeah, you're present in the experience most of the time, unless there's something going on that's sort of over, you know, that you lose awareness. But most people have pretty good awareness of what's happening.
Would you take it and drive a car?
Absolutely not.
You would not.
That would defeat the purpose.
Okay. All right. So it's...
No, you want to take it in a safe area. You want to take it in which we call a ceremony space, where you have a guide, you have support, you have... When we work with a plant in my retreats in Peru, I work with two shamans. We're singing songs the whole time. It's the beginning of the ceremony. We set a container of how we support each person. It's a hospital setting. When you work with the plant, you're in a spirit hospital for that period of time. There's no way you could drive a car. Sometimes people are unable to move their bodies for periods of time. So, yeah, it's definitely an internal healing, internal journey.
Is it considered a psychedelic as well or not?
Well, I don't like that word psychedelic very much, because I think it
sounds like LSD.
Yeah, well, no, I don't really think it's like LSD.
No, I'm saying the word psychedelic.
Oh, right, psychedelic, so, yeah. That word I try to not use that much, because it has so much cultural baggage. It's often referred to LSD. People think of the 60s. People immediately have a certain connotation to it at the
yes,
time.
Yes, it's very negative. It's negative.
Yeah, that they're like, oh, hippies in Golden Gate Park, you know. But we're talking about working with a medicinal plant as a healing agent. And you go to seek that out when there's something wrong. You need help with something. Something's going on. Maybe you feel depressed, or there's something going on in the body. Ayahuasca is used to heal all kinds of things, from autoimmune disorders, cancers, Lyme disease. It's incredible in its uses for not only the mental level, so treating people with depression and anxiety and phobias and self-hatred, but it's also a physical and emotional level. It teaches us how to deal with our emotions, release emotions.
Why hasn't science tried to take advantage of this and turn it into some kind of prescription or something?
Well, they have. There's so much new science coming out right now about plants in general, even the power of psilocybin mushrooms and how they've been used for hundreds of years in Oaxaca, Mexico, to treat all kinds of different conditions, or also peyote, which is used by the Native American Church and has incredible benefits. Ayahuasca has been studied, but because we're talking about something in the form of a plant medicine spirit, ayahuasca doesn't conform to the norms. It's not like you take it and it's a one-size-fits-all. It has its own way of working. Sometimes it won't work. Sometimes it'll be really strong. Your journey depends on you. So each person's experience, say I have 20 guests on a retreat, and they all take the medicine, we start at the same time, but they could have 20 different journeys. They could be experiencing 20 completely different things. Some people reliving a childhood moment, somebody else understanding the nature of the cosmos, someone else living a past life, someone else seeing, you know, what's happening with their mother and how they can have a better relationship. You know, it's so varied. And so it's very hard to don't believe it. There's been all kinds of pharmaceutical companies all over the Amazon
okay.
trying to work with these plants, but
duplicating.
It's very hard to synthesize something of this kind of nature.
Does it increase a out-of-body experience or anything like that?
It can increase out-of-body experiences, but what it does is it naturally boosts up our serotonin levels in the brain.
So it makes you happy.
So, yeah, it leads to, feelings generally of increased happiness. So there's all kinds of science. UCLA is doing a lot of science. John Hopkins is doing a lot of science and research. There's been all kinds of studies in Brazil. Brazil, where ayahuasca is considered a national treasure, because all over South America, these medicinal plants are legal and celebrated. Ecuador, Bolivia, Peru, Brazil, Mexico, North America has made it illegal, which is kind of sad, but I do understand because abuse does happen. But
sure.
In South America, all these plants are considered very helpful for people.
What's the downside of this stuff, Spring?
The downside is people who are attracted to all these different healing modalities who are not able to handle a journey like that. So maybe they are have an extreme something going on, but they have mental illness, something very diagnosed, like they may have been hospitalized before, extreme levels of bipolar syndrome, or aren't able to open to that kind of experience. Those are the kind of cases that are sometimes when people are seeking out a healing modality. And these are also the kinds of people that intense meditation practice isn't right for either. When I work at meditation centers, we often have to, you know, someone might come on the retreat and have a background, and then they might have a psychotic episode or disassociate. And then we're like, oh my goodness, you know, we look in their history and called one of their family members and find out, oh, okay, they have a background in this. They're an intense retreat environment isn't good for that person either. So it's the same with working with plant medicine. It's not right for everybody. It also can be challenging for people if they have a history of addiction, and they can get very confused, like, okay, I'm in 12-step. Should I be working with this? And I encourage people that if they're in recovery and that recovery is going well, that, you know, don't try to maybe jump into this too soon. Wait until you're really well established. These plants do have a great history in helping people with addiction. They don't lead to addiction. They help people understand addiction. But still, it can create confusion for people.
Oh, sure. Can you take care of yourself, though, in this healing modality without the plants?
Yeah, of course. I think that you can learn to heal, you know, trauma, heal depression, heal all of these things in a natural way, lifestyle changes, getting support, therapy, all kinds of things. I think where plant medicine comes in a helpful way is accelerating that process. So plant medicine is right for people who are already sort of well-grounded on a spiritual journey and looking to accelerate their awakening process, or their, not awakening because that's not a word that's so also overused, but their healing process. They want to move through things quicker. They're ready to, you know how you meet people and they say, man, you know, I've been doing all these practices, meditating, yoga, eating this, but I still have these same habits. I'm still suffering with the same issue for 10 years, 15 years. I don't understand why I have this block to getting better. Plants can be used as a skillful way to move through blockages. And I hear this a lot from people. They say, I've been doing this practice, but my heart is still closed. I'm still so angry, or I'm still so hurt. This is a way to move through things a bit quicker. And in our world right now, with things being in the state that we're in, that quickening the awakening and healing process is really useful. So, but yes, you can do things on your own to heal, absolutely, through lifestyle changes, through utilizing all of these incredible healing modalities that are available right now, absolutely. But this is just a faster path.
You talk about forgiveness. Tell me about your thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean, forgiveness is like, I think this is the cornerstone of relationships and being in a society is, learning how to forgive each other. Now, this doesn't mean we don't have boundaries, and we're, you know, one of my Tibetan teachers used to always say, don't have idiot compassion. You know, yes, forgive people, but you don't invite the person over for dinner that, you know, the next day if they're a...
Well, know, and does he mean you can forgive everybody? Because I can't. I've got my limits.
Right. Okay. So I think that that's a good place to begin because, you know, a lot of the work I was doing, and I still do, not as much as I used to, but spent a lot of time working in Oakland and downtown Oakland, and people would come in and they would have these just incredible stories of suffering or what they endured or what happened to them. I mean, these are things that we know, abuse and forgiving family members and betrayal. But what I always think about in terms of forgiveness, and I write about this really clearly in a chapter in my book called Free Your Heart. And what I'm doing is I'm not forgiving the person, I'm forgiving greed, hatred, and delusion.
Okay, but what about a person who kills a family member of yours? Could you forgive them for that? And I'm not talking about a car accident, they were drunk.
Yeah, they murdered.
They murdered them.
Yeah. I think at this stage in my life, I could forgive them.
Really? I couldn't?
Yeah, because what I'm forgiving is the mind state. I'm forgiving the hatred in a way. I'm seeking to understand, like, wow, so somebody kills a family member, and then that person then spends the rest of their life in jail, or they set in motion a kind of negative seed.
How could you forgive somebody like that, though?
Because, you know what, I can forgive the mind. And it's not, it starts with having compassion.
But they killed somebody that you loved and cared about. They killed them. It wasn't a car accident. It wasn't a mistake. They actually killed somebody.
I know.
Premeditated. They went in. I mean, we're obviously making this up. Somebody just listening went, oh, my God, somebody got murdered. But no, we're making this up, folks. But
right.
But I couldn't forgive a murderer like that. I can't. Or a child abuser. Or something. I can't forgive that.
Getting into children, it gets harder, you know, because all of us have, you know, the desire to protect children. And yeah, I mean, you know, one of the challenges that I've had is working with the Catholic priests. That, you know, these priests thought, oh, the betrayal in my heart, you know, like, what?
I could forgive somebody who robbed me, who was so desperate for money, they had to do some kind of act like that. I could forgive that.
You could forgive that. We all have our boundaries of what we consider unforgivable. But, you know, what I consider myself as someone who's on a spiritual path, and I'm trying to use and that's why I say this is the fierce heart, because I'm trying to open to the difficulties that all of us deal with, right? And how do I forgive the unforgivable, right? How do I do that? So a lot of times what I do when I work with people or even myself is I take refuge in stories like Nelson Mandela, you know, or Dr. King, and I find this kind of strength in their stories to endure, to forgive, and to teach others how to forgive. You know, I think a lot in those moments about South Africa and the Truth and Reconciliation Commission when Nelson Mandela became president, and how and the, you know, he was elected, and then the whole community was on the verge of just tearing itself apart in rage and anger for years of brutal murders and oppression and injustice, right? But instead, he sets up the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and airs people asking for forgiveness, right? Case after case. He was so skillful in that. So instead of the whole community of South Africa erupting in rage and hurt, they're all sitting there talking about forgiveness, and these cases are being aired for 2 years straight. The whole country then is talking about forgiveness. And really, that story inspires me a lot, right? Well, somebody needs to be talking about this.
What was his wife's name?
Winnie.
Winnie Mandela. If somebody had hurt her, you think Nelson could have forgiven them? I don't think so.
Well, she was hurt, actually. The police had arrested her for a period of time and tortured her in jail for about 2 years.
All right, and would you forgive those officers who tortured her?
But he did.
I wouldn't.
He did. You know, he did, and he forgave. His Truth and Reconciliation Commission was really about anyone who's committed any crime could come to the commission, and he started off with people in jail. Right. First, we're going to go through all the people in jail, and they can lobby and reach out to the commission, and they have to confess the crime in detail, the names, the place, everything that they did, ask for forgiveness totally, and commit never to do it again.
Stay with us, Spring. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more about your work, A Fierce Heart, but we'll also take phone calls next hour as well. The book is available on Amazon.com, published by The Great Hay House. Her websites, LotusVineJourneys.com and SpringWasham.com. We've got it linked up for you at CoastToCoastAM.com.